After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Everybody, JJ Cooper, Carlos Collazo, another Baseball America playoff podcast. We have a lot to talk about. Since the last time that we gathered together, we've had a whole lot of World Series. We had Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We had Ian Anderson both being dominant and a little shaky at the same time, if it's possible to do that. You had a lot of home runs. You had the Braves taking a 3-1 lead. And then you had a game last night where the Astros send it back to Houston. And in a game that I think we'll talk about, it sure felt like that one of these teams knew it was do or die. And the other team knew that they needed to win one of three games and played that way. Not because they didn't try to win, but just how they used their pitching and all that. There's a lot to dissect. But Carlos, I'll start by just asking you, after a flurry of weekend postseason baseball, what is the thing that sticks to your mind most as we sit here trying to wrap up three games in Atlanta in one podcast?
I guess the first thing that jumps out is our wishes were answered. We got a lot of really competitive games this weekend after the first two games of the series were pretty much done with after the fifth inning. Really all three games in Atlanta, maybe the last couple innings of this game number five here wasn't super engaging, but for the most part, I think we got about 25 innings worth of really compelling baseball, and that was fun to watch. Just from my perspective, I think both these teams have kind of showed you why they're here. I was really impressed with a few of the Braves starters that we're going to talk about. Ian Anderson has been just unbelievable in the playoffs his entire brief career, but it's a pretty decent sample of playoff appearances for him right now. I think Kyle Wright did step up. We talked about him as a potential player to watch for the Braves. He stepped up and threw five, I think, really solid innings for them in game number four. So that was fun to watch. And really, I feel like for both teams, maybe the Astros, it's been a little bit more heavy for the top players kind of doing the heavy lifting offensively. But I feel like both these teams have had a number of players step up and help them out in big spots. It doesn't seem like, I mean, it's baseball, so this is probably what happens every single postseason, but it's really been a full team effort for both these teams to make this series what it's been so far. So I guess for me, the overarching kind of comment is just, it's been a fun series to watch.
It has been a fun series. I will admit, I'll hold my hand up. I made it through the eighth last night, not intentionally. I was on the couch and I found myself, I woke up, it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, wait a second. I know it was 9 to 5. The last thing I remember was heading to the ninth. And so I had to check, and I'm like, okay, I didn't miss much. I did go back and watch, but I didn't miss much, but I did. I made it to midnight. I'm old. I made it to midnight, but I did not make it to the end of the game last night. But it was, I kind of unfortunately do say, when you say the compelling meter, I would not have fallen asleep in Friday or Saturday's games in the late. There's a part of my brain that knew that I could probably doze off in that ninth and not miss too much.
A combined no hitter on Friday night does make for more compelling baseball in the back innings of that game. But I wanted to ask you about that game specifically, because there were a lot of narratives, there were a lot of takes, there were a lot of opinions on the decision to pull Ian Anderson as he was pitching a no-hitter. I think the national media had a lot of just commentary in general about the lack of starting pitchers going deep into games. That's been a consistent theme that we've seen during this playoffs. People have different takes on whether that's good or bad for baseball and just how to evaluate that. But just in terms of the decision to pull Ian Anderson, are you pro pull Anderson, or would you have liked to see him go out there for another inning?
I'm baffled by it, to be honest, because we're talking about a decision. There was no scenario, none, where Ian Anderson was going to pitch all nine innings of a no hitter there. Mm-hmm. Like, what I don't understand with it, I completely get it. If this was the eighth and Ian Anderson was at 105 pitches, let's say, right?
Yeah.
And you're saying, is it better off? It's a 1-0 game, let's say, and Ian Anderson has a no hitter and they pull him, which they probably would have done and they should have done, because bringing in a reliever for that ninth inning would have been a better way to win the game and get the no hitter than keeping Ian Anderson in. But I understand at that point that there would have been gnashing of teeth and, oh, what does the game become that a pitcher has a chance to throw the second no hitter in World Series history and we pull him in the eighth. I get it. That would have been a massive discussion to have. The discussion here was, is he going to pitch five innings of this no hitter or six? And if you got crazy, maybe seven, but there was no scenario where you were saying, oh, Ian Anderson, they pulled him and he had a chance to throw a complete game no hitter.
Yeah.
They were going to have his, yeah, it's going to be a combined no hitter.
He was at 76 pitches after five innings. He's thrown over 100 pitches in his career just two times. So they're definitely not going to push him much beyond that regardless. But
especially at the last week of October, at the end of the longest season of his career.
Exactly. And I just feel like the no hit narrative kind of takes this argument to a place where it doesn't really need to go, because it is not as if Ian Anderson was pitching a flawless baseball game. He was solid at times. At other times, he was missing the zone. He wasn't locating with his fastball consistently. He had walked three batters. He hit one. He threw 51% strikes just overall. And of those pitches, only 20 of his 76 pitches finished in the zone. So it was certainly an effectively wild start, in my opinion. And basically, the calculation comes down to, would you rather have Ian Anderson in his sixth inning going through the order, the top of the order for the third time, or would you rather have a fresh AJ Minter? And then you turn it over to kind of the beast of the bullpen with a 2-0 lead. And I think the right decision was made, and the Braves, it paid off for them in that case, but
they won the game. Like, yes. At the end of the day.
Yes.
There is no decrying a scenario that won the game. And 100%. By the way, Ian Anderson no one has yet come to me and said, here's how Ian Anderson was going to get through that to throw a complete game no hitter. It wasn't going to happen.
I do remember at the time, and maybe this gets lost just because Kyle Wright was so good in the next game. At the time, there were a lot of people just kind of arguing that with two bullpen games on the horizon, you needed Ian Anderson to take as much of the ball as you possibly could. So why would you take out the starter throwing a no hitter when you know you need to save your bullpen bullets for the next two games? But at the same time, when you have a lead in the World Series, I think you need to do everything you can to secure that win and figure out the next games when they come. If you're losing and you're down, I think that changes the calculus a little bit, which maybe we can get into for the game five talk about Tucker Davidson and just how the pen was managed in that game. But Friday night, I thought the game was managed pretty perfectly by Brian Snitker. And obviously at the end of the day, the players have to make the plays, make the pitches and kind of settle it for themselves. But I don't want to go too long about the Ian Anderson stuff unless you have more to say, JJ. But again, I mean, this is a pitcher who is 23 years old and has the fourth lowest ERA of any starter to throw eight games in the postseason. It's pretty impressive what he's been able to do.
It's very impressive. I am a giant fan of Ian Anderson and how he pitches. I do think that he is one of those guys who... And it's funny, we talk about it. His command was not very good in that game, but I've always thought that his command and his ability to mix his pitches has always been better than any one pitch. He He doesn't, he's not one of those guys who is like, okay, he has this pitch that is just unhittable and that's why he's so good. It's more of the assortment of it all together. The changeup's really good. Although even by, if you defined it by metrics, it'd be, it's really more of deception to it or whatever than 100%. It is the action of it and all that. But
I remember writing about Ian just the last capsule he had for, I think we had him as the number two prospect in the Braves system when he ranked last. And my comment was just that he doesn't, if you look at his individual pitches, none of them really blow you away. I think you could say at the time his changeup was for sure a plus pitch, but really everything else just kind of plays up based on his deception, his arm slot, how he tunnels pitches together, how he mixes and matches. If you take one of those pitches away, I think the entire repertoire probably falls apart a little bit, but just the combination of all three of his pitches and his ability to spot that changeup down really just lets everything play up. And he is fascinating to watch because the changeup isn't some crazy moving pitch. It doesn't drop out of the zone, doesn't fade a ton. The velocity separation from his fastball isn't ridiculous, but there's just something about what he does, whether that's deception, whether that's how he commands that three pitch mix, whether that's tunneling. It's fun to watch him pitch.
The thing that I wanted to kind of tie into what you just said, there was a lot of decrying of the demise of the starting pitcher because Ian Anderson didn't go through nine on that, which again, I just feel like it was the wrong example to choose for that.
Yeah.
Choose it when a guy is carrying a no hitter into the eighth and is at 100 pitches, not that. But the thing that I do think is happening, that has happened, I should say, that we're kind of maybe missing a little bit as much. If you want to talk about the demise of the starter, there's long been the idea that in the postseason, your fifth starter doesn't really matter anymore. You get to the postseason and teams use four. And in some instances, they'll even go to bring back a starter on short rest rather than use the number four, right? We've seen that for a long time. What we see now is if you are a number four starter, you are you're almost the appendix of a postseason rotation. You're there, but you really don't serve a purpose anymore. Mm-hmm. And I say that Drew Smyly, I would say, is the definition for the Braves all season of being a number four starter. They had the big three, they had Fried, they had Anderson, they had Charlie Morton, and then they had Drew Smyly, who made 26 starts, I believe, all season. Mm-hmm. Jake Odorizzi is effectively like the number four starter of the Astros. And both of these guys, and it's not just them. We could talk about Tony Gonsolin. We could talk about all these teams. It does not matter at this point what the scenario is. It seems like that you look at the Braves would much rather hand the ball to a much less established, much less experienced wild card of Tucker Davidson than they would to say, here, Drew Smyly, go get us 4 to 5 innings of outs. They would say, let's take the stuff over the command. Mm-hmm. And the same thing could be said for the Astros. And the same thing could be said in almost every postseason series we've seen this year, is that it's not like Drew Smyly doesn't pitch. It's not like Jake Odorizzi doesn't pitch, guys like that. But guys like that are really used in kind of more. Drew Smyly was used in a lower leverage situation. He was the guy.
It's almost like they turn into lower leverage, long relievers. Just get us some innings when we're down in the game. And we need to save our bullets for our next competitive game when we have higher leverage situations or when it's close. And if it's not close, you're kind of just soaking up innings for us. I mean, Drew Smyly pitched 3.1 innings in the NLCS in a 9-2 game. He pitched one inning in game two of this World Series. And then he pitched three innings last night when the game, I think he was brought in when the Braves were down two. And that was, some people wanted to see the Braves use their higher leverage relievers down in the game. I didn't think that was, I could see that one either way. I think when you're down two runs, you probably just save your bullets. You got two games where you can kind of close this out. But again, he's, like you said, he's been a lower leverage mop-up role, really.
And he's been a lower leverage mop-up role. At when they asked Dusty Baker, after the game. So what's your plan? Luis Garcia on short rest? Yes, Luis Garcia on short rest. Mm-hmm. There was no scenario where they're saying, oh, by the way, no, we'll use Odorizzi and then we'll have Garcia on regular. No, it is something where, and look at the Braves also. I think they did get a little cute on Saturday. They started Dylan Lee, but then Kyle Wright. Again, Kyle Wright has sat in AAA this year while Drew Smyly was getting the ball time after time. But come World Series, stuff over the veteran with less stuff but more command and feel, it seems like that's happening over and over and over. The reason I say I think that they got too cute with it is the reason to me that you use the opener like that is to try to get a matchup. To try, when you have a team that likes to platoon, it's a scenario like when you saw it done against the Rays. It's like, okay, let's make them decide, do they want to use their guys who are best against the lefty, or they want to use their guys who are best against the righty and just suffer for that first inning with less than ideal matchups because they know that we're going to get that guy in the second and third, you know, the bulk hitting guy. The Astros, you know that you're going to get the same lineup no matter what. They didn't really, there wasn't going to be a change to that. There wasn't going to be something where, because they brought Dylan Lee in to start the game, that all of a sudden you had a whole new Astros lineup. You had the same guys in largely the same spots in the order. So I don't know why they didn't start Kyle Wright because of that. But but overall,
my only thing would be is if you can maybe nullify the first three batters your first time through with the opener, maybe you feel a little bit more confident that Kyle Wright can give you more innings without having to go through that top three a third time. But
Dylan Lee that guy?
I can see the argument that, you don't have the staff to really make that worthwhile. Maybe just let Kyle Wright do his normal routine because he did start the entire year at AAA. He was at AAA, but it's not like he was pitching in the bullpen. So, I can see that case. I don't feel strongly either way, but you make a good point.
My point is if you were saying AJ Minter was the opener, okay, you're then saying one of our higher leverage guys is going to get through the meat of this Astros order in the first, and then we'll hand it over right. I see that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
That's not Dylan Lee. Dylan Lee is the guy, I mean, if we talk about that, Drew Smyly's the break glass in case of emergency guy. Dylan Lee, who was had a very fine year at AAA, but Dylan Lee, if you're ranking Braves relievers in order of leverage, is not going to be among the top five guys you say. But overarching thing, this may tie into the prospect handbook. We've always talked about setup man, closers, all that. we really have gotten now to a point where I feel like that relievers can be defined one of three ways, because we've also gotten rid of specialists largely, largely because of the three batter rule. But there's high leverage guys, there's lower leverage guys, and there's bulk guys. And all of them have value, but I don't see a distinction nowadays. To cite an example, is Tyler Matzek for the Braves, is he a setup man and Will Smith is a closer? Or are they really at this point on the same continuum from the standpoint of Matzek pitches earlier innings than Will Smith does? But Matzek also is a guy that they bring in when it's like the house is on fire, the bases are loaded, there's no outs. Save us, Tyler Matzek. Whereas Will Smith, it's generally said, having a great postseason. But generally, it is to Will Smith, it's like, here is the ball. It's the ninth inning. The bases are clean. Go get us out of it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think for a long time, I've thought the closer tag was kind of irrelevant. I mean, saves as a statistic, I think are one of the least useful that we have in baseball. But it does seem like we're getting to a point where pitchers are being handled. Like you mentioned, there are a few guys you really trust in high leverage situations. And maybe there are a few guys in your bullpen who just for whatever reason, feel more comfortable in a certain routine. And you have the pieces to kind of let one of those pitchers go in a normal routine. He always gets the ninth. If it's close in that situation and you don't have a better spot to put that pitcher in earlier in the game, I'm fine with it. But I do think, yeah, you've got three guys in this bullpen where you feel pretty good. I mean, maybe four at this point, where you feel pretty good with them coming in at high leverage situations, and how you juggle them, who comes in first, that's really just up to the manager, up to what the pitchers are used to and maybe most comfortable with. But yeah, I don't think there's any real use in having a closer designation or a setup man designation. It's how many pitchers do you have in your bullpen that you feel comfortable putting in high leverage situations? And obviously the more of those you have, the shorter you can make the game, the more flexible you can get throughout a long intense series like this one.
By the way, a random stat with that, this shocks me. If you said, so Will Smith has six saves this postseason, no other pitcher has two saves this postseason. That surprises me.
The death of the closer.
Well, it's not just even the death of the closer. There have been less close games than I thought in this postseason, because
I guess between the NLCS and this World Series, the Braves have had a number of close games.
There have only been 11 saves total. Will Smith has six. Everyone else in baseball has five this postseason.
That's great. Including, the less we can care about saves, the better. So I'm here for this.
Including, so Max Scherzer is tied for the second most saves in the postseason.
Wow.
You know, but what a legend. We're going to keep talking about the World Series, but we're going to stop for a moment for a quick break. We'll be right back after this message. And we're back. So Carlos, the other thing you said, like last night, I said the way I put it was, is that I felt like that you had one team that knew they had to win and another that knew that they had to win one of three. You touched on it with Smiley coming in later in the game. I felt like even in the early innings of that game, the reason that you, I don't necessarily think it didn't work out clearly, but the reason that you let Tucker Davidson bat in the second, even with a lead, is because you are saying, we want to win this game if you're the Braves.
Yeah.
But we're not going to push all in to win this game. They wanted to get more innings out of him if they could, because they're looking at it and saying, we've got to win one of three. Whereas the Astros, Jose Urquidy is supposed to start game six. Hey, if we need him, we're going to use Urquidy. It felt like you had two teams in very different situations in that game.
Yeah, it did. And I thought at the time, I kind of was surprised that Davidson continued to go out there, because he did not look sharp. It seemed like he lost some confidence in his fastball in the second inning after he gave up, I don't remember who hit that single, but he gave up a hard hit single and then really just went to his breaking stuff. Didn't feel like he had confidence in the pitch, was missing the zone a decent bit. And I thought with a 2-run lead at the time, you pull him, pinch hit for him, start going to your pen early and really try and lock the series down there with an off day today as we record this podcast. That was my thinking, but it's easy for me to say this sitting here, not really knowing how much stress is under the arms. How confident do you feel in your high leverage pitchers just getting another day of work when you know you do have two extra games? I think for me, if you've got the lead in the World Series, I really like pushing in the chips and going for it. At the same time, it's very easy for me to say sitting here, not really knowing to the extent that Snitker and the people involved with the Braves do, how far you can really push your arms. And this bullpen has been pretty heavily taxed for the Braves this postseason. So I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, it was definitely the wrong decision to send Tucker Davidson out there, just not knowing again, like how much usage you can get with those guys before you get diminishing returns and they start to pitch poorly. So it's a balancing act for sure. But definitely, I think you're right. When you're in an elimination game, you kind of have to push all those pieces out regardless. You don't have any option. If you lose this game, you're just done. So the flexibility or the ability to not have to do that certainly is a benefit for Atlanta. And for the Astros, a number of their hitters really stepped up. Carlos Correa had a fantastic game on both sides of the ball. He went 3-for-5 and really seemed like he was kind of just paving the way for this team. Alex Bregman finally got hot in the middle innings, had a really impressive double to the opposite field. I think him getting hot for these next two games is really going to be key. And if he can't get hot, maybe you just put Zach Greinke into the lineup.
Hey, that was great. But the thing to me is a lot of people on Twitter last night were saying, but they have a day off tomorrow. So why do they need to save these guys? And I like how you put it. We don't know the exact details of any of this. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to pretend like we do.
Yeah.
But that said, at this point, as we literally sit here in November, we are now playing November baseball. In November, to say that, oh, but they have a day off in a month where there's been the highest leverage of high leverage situations. I do think that these relievers like Tyler Matzek having 2 days off is significant. You are going to feel better with 2 days off than you will with one. With 2 days off, also, you will feel better if you have to go back-to-backs game six and game seven than you would if you got 1 day off. So from that standpoint, the Braves, you can argue with it if you want to me, the early innings, Tucker Davidson going back out there for the third. Mm-hmm. You could even argue in the middle innings because at that point, the Braves did retake the lead 5-4. But once the Astros took the lead, to me at that point, there's no argument that to say that it doesn't make sense to say, okay, yes, they gave up a few more runs, but once they scored five, they didn't score anymore. And so it did not hurt them once they gave up the lead to say, okay, well, we're going to use some of the lower leverage guys in our pen to get us to game six and game seven with resting really a lot of the higher leverage arms in the Braves pen.
Yeah, definitely. And this one, I don't know how I'm feeling going into these next two games in Houston. Obviously, it seems like the Braves are set up pretty well. You have to feel comfortable with really your best starter at this point in Max Fried going on normal rest. And then after that, you got to feel pretty good about Ian Anderson, given what he's done. So if you're the Astros right now, how confident do you feel that you can get back into this game? Because it's baseball. It's only two games, but it does still seem like, at least from my perspective, that things are kind of heavily tilted towards Atlanta. Is that too strong, do you think, or is this one more even than maybe I'm putting it out there?
On the pitching side, the advantage is clearly in the Braves standpoint right now. Like you got short rest and I guess Greinke in game seven, who again is, he went four. That's about, but it's hard to believe he'll go more than four. And the Astros are going to absolutely throw everything against the wall. Urquidy very well could start game seven also. Mm-hmm. He threw 14 pitches. If Garcia's going six, maybe it's Urquidy in seven. That said, they're having to do everything, admittedly, at every point to keep it alive. You worry about the next game the next day. The Braves are in a situation where they will now have their best two remaining starters, only two remaining starters, going on effectively, you know, on normal rest for game six, game seven, with their higher leverage guys in their bullpen, other than Minter having had more rest than at any point since this series began. But I think it really comes down to the Astros lineup. The thing about it is that this Astros lineup, if you said, how could they win it? They could win these two games, even if their pitching isn't very good, because this lineup is good enough that if Jordan Alvarez, who hasn't really had a monstrous World Series, or Correa, as you mentioned, or Bregman gets hot, or Tucker, or Altuve, or Brantley, there are a lot of guys in this lineup who put together great at-bat after great at-bat normally. And if you told me that they pummeled the Braves' best pitching over the final two games of the series, completely plausible, because they can pummel anyone's best pitching. It's this good of a lineup. Yeah, I think there's clearly there's an advantage for the Braves. Mm-hmm. If you say one of these has to win two games and one wins one, I'm not going out on a limb to say I'll take the team that needs to win one, you know, and feel pretty good about that. But it is utterly plausible to say, can the Astros win three games in a row with this team? Absolutely. Absolutely. And it doesn't require that Luis Garcia go out there and become Bob Gibson in 1968 for it to happen.
No doubt.
What do you think?
No, I think you summed it up. I think you summed it up nicely. I think it's very easy to maybe convince yourselves that the Braves are in kind of an inevitable position to win. I think it's always dangerous, maybe regardless of who the teams are and how they're playing in baseball, to ever feel that comfortable in any sort of postseason series. But I think you summed it up nicely. This Astros lineup is incredibly deep. And to this point in the series, we have not seen them firing on all cylinders. And if they wake up in these next two games and we see that lineup kind of in peak form, yeah, it wouldn't be surprising at all to see that happen. At the same time, I think the Braves lineup is equally up to that task. We've seen guys like Travis d'Arnaud and Adam Duvall have really impressive and table-setting hits for this team. I mean, Duvall's home run in the first inning last night was pretty loud. But then you have guys like Ozzie Albies and Dansby Swanson who really haven't maybe had the series that you're expecting of them defensively and offensively. Ozzie has had some highlights defensively that have been pretty impressive, but last night he had a couple errant throws. Dansby really hasn't looked like himself this entire World Series defensively. It was nice to see him get that big home run in game four, I believe, to kind of spark their comeback and take a 3-1 lead. But no, I think both these lineups, I think teams can feel confident, or fans of teams can feel confident, that they can carry you to a victory even if you don't have your best pitching. So, I mean, we touched on this in our podcast on Friday, that maybe this is just going to turn into an offensive series. And to some extent, we saw that last night. I think the final score maybe exaggerates a little bit how close that game was. But I'm just looking forward to seeing what happens. Max Fried has shown glimpses of dominance throughout this postseason. At other times, he's been a little bit more susceptible. And I'm just excited to see the next few games. I don't know if I have any other kind of final take or prediction or anything. I'm just ready for Tuesday.
As someone, Kyle for us is traveling to Houston, so he, you know, he's bouncing around and all. As someone who's just sitting at home watching these games, we have more World Series baseball. Yes. That's a great thing. With not having a dog in this fight, let's go seven. You know, let's take the season as far as it can go.
Game sevens at the Baseball America office. That is no doubt the case.
I would say our IT guy may not be. You know, Brent Lewis is a pretty diehard Braves fan, and I would say that he would quite prefer
this be done sooner.
it be done in five now in six, but. For many of us, it is just, let's have all the baseball that we can have, and that will be fun. But that's a perfect way to wrap it up. If you haven't got a chance, leave a review for us on whatever your favorite podcast catcher, whatever that is, whether that's Apple, iTunes, whether that's Google,
Spotify. Google Podcast, Stitcher.
Podcast Addict, which I'm the lone guy out there, but
hey, Podcast Addict. I've used that before as well, JJ. I'm with you. You finally have someone from the Android team with you on the podcast.
It's a very good product. I recommend if you're Androids, I think it does quite well at what it does. But whatever it is, we do appreciate the download. We will be back again on Wednesday to wrap up game 6. And then we'll be back on Thursday with our playoff podcast, if necessary, depending on what happens in game 6. So for Carlos, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save